Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Chris Graham. It's a Monday, and we've got snow on the way. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But it's going to be a snow week here, at least in Central Virginia. I say snow week because based on the tolls we're being talked about getting, it's going to be a week of snow, I would assume, after it falls and won't go away for a while. But it's Monday, and I want to talk first. We have another one of those for our UVA basketball fans out there listening regularly to our more specific UVA basketball podcast. We have another Saturday-Monday back-to-back where you have a hard time just keeping up with everything. Virginia played Saturday, beat Notre Dame. It's a tight game. Tonight, big Monday. Virginia on the road at Blacksburg at Virginia Tech. And Zach Peerless will be, in fact, he's probably, let's see, I'm recording this about 4 o'clock on Monday. He's probably there now or close to being in Blacksburg now for the 7 o'clock tip. So Zach and I and Scott German will be leading our in-game blog. But then Zach will have coverage from Blacksburg, comments from Coach Bennett, from Buzz Williams at Virginia Tech, players from both sides, I'm sure, from the postgame. Number 3 Virginia, number 20 Virginia Tech in a game that I expect will be an interesting one just because you know, Virginia did blow out Virginia Tech in the first game between these teams, and that was a full Virginia Tech squad. And when I say that, that means they had Justin Robinson in tow. Not sure about the status of Robinson. I mean, I think we'd all be surprised if he plays tonight or if he plays any time in the next couple weeks. It looks like in Tech, just like everybody else in college basketball these days, being very tight-lipped about injuries to players. So they've not indicated anything publicly about his availability, but it seems like those who cover the program, both the writers and then broadcasters who come in for one-game kind of scenarios, are saying that Robinson likely back, maybe just ahead of the ACC tournament, if not for the ACC tournament, and so not likely to play tonight. So I say all that to say Virginia blew out Virginia Tech when they had Justin Robinson, who I think is, you know, I'm just going to say it this way, I think he's the best point guard in the ACC, and I'm even saying that above Ty Jerome. I love Ty Jerome. I think of Ty Jerome more as a combo guard. I think pure point guard. Justin Robinson's the best guy in the ACC. I think he's not the best player on that team. When you look at Nikhil Alexander-Walker getting talk about, you know, being a lottery pick if he comes out this year, which a lot of folks think he will. But Robinson may not be an NBA player, but I think at the college level and for what he does for that program, he is the best player for that. You know, he's the best, most important player on that team, and he's not there. But that all said, I think Virginia Tech's been playing well of late, even without him. They lost him midway through the game with Miami down there, and I'm going to pull the numbers up here real quick. But, you know, for a team that lost a guy significant to that, let's see, the Miami game was back on January 30th, and here we are February 18th, so we're about almost 3 weeks into this now. They held on and beat Miami in that game, double digits. The next game was that memorable game, memorable in a bad way for NC State, 47-24 final at NC State. A loss to Louisville, an 8-point loss that was basically a two-possession game, minute and a half to go. A loss at Clemson by 8. That game was tight down the stretch, a Clemson team needing a win. Beat Virginia Tech by 8, beat Pitt by 6, the win at Pitt this weekend. I'm happy with that if I'm a Virginia Tech fan. You're 3-2 without your big guy. You played the two teams who are likely NCAA tournament teams. Louisville is an NCAA tournament team. Clemson likely won. You played those games relatively tight down the stretch. So I can't complain about that about Virginia Tech. They've still got weapons. They've got Nikhil Alexander-Walker. They've got Kerry Blackshear, who are two big guys. Ty Outlaw from three-point range is someone on Mud Hill, too. You know, they're having trouble at point guard. But you know, it's Virginia Tech and Virginia, and it's in Blacksburg, and it's a tough place to play. KenPom.com has the score at 62-60 now. I don't know how the numbers for something like that factor in, you know, a guy being missing, because I don't know that it would, you know, realistically would odds would be that close for this kind of a game without a significant player like him. I'm going to pull up real quick the ESPN matchup predictor, 62.8% chance for UVA. UVA a 5-point favorite as far as that goes. And that would factor in Robinson's lack of availability. But I tell you, we say this all the time. Castle Coliseum is a tough place to play. I think the toughest place to play on the road for Virginia teams in the ACC, and I think even tougher than Duke, because the way the castle was built, the student section is right above the visiting team bench. And when I say right above, I mean right above. It's an old arena. It wasn't built like some of the newer arenas, unlike JPJ. JPJ's built straight up as well. But, you know, arenas like the Dean Dome are built kind of spread out. So the fans are, you know, a lot of fans are way far away from the court. Everybody in Castle's right on top of the floor. So there's only maybe 9,000 people there, but they're right on top of the floor. It's an intimidating place to play when you're a bitter rival like Virginia going down there. So should be interesting. And Zach will have that experience tonight. And he'll be able to report on that as much as he will the game. In fact, I want to get him on a podcast tomorrow to talk specifically about the environment as much as anything. I've been impressed with the environment I've seen there in my times down in Blacksburg. So we'll hope Zach gets back late tonight. He will, but he'll get back late tonight to get ahead of the snow. I talked about the snow. So Weather Channel saying 8 to 12 inches for Central Virginia, Waynesboro, Stanton, in the Charlottesville area. I have a little weather app, the Dark Sky app that I use, says 11 to 16 inches. It goes back and forth between 11 to 16, 12 to 18, 10 to 15. So a lot of snow is coming my way, which is just tough because last week it was 60 degrees a few days. I was out running in shorts and a tank top. Beautiful weather. I got a sunburn one of the days I was out running. And it's going to be a lot of snow coming Tuesday night into Wednesday, most of the day Wednesday. And then it's supposed to end as rain and then actually be in the mid-50s on Thursday. And I think even as 66 on Sunday. So, you know, it's already, you know, this has been the wettest 2 years I've ever been through in my life. And I'm 46 years old. It's so wet outside. It's just, you know, my backyard, I have a nice little plot here in downtown Waynesboro. Got a quarter of an acre. I got a basketball hoop on the backyard. Big backyard for my dogs to run in. Fenced in yard. And it's just a marsh. You know, we live about half miles, 0.6 miles from the South River. It's, you know, so we're sort of in a watershed. We're not quite in a floodplain. We're, you know, but we're not far from a floodplain. But man, it's a swamp out there. And, you know, you're going to be dumping 10 to 15 inches of snow and then some rain and then high temperatures going to melt it all real quick. It's just going to be, it's going to be a mess. We're supposed to have some work done next week here. You know, we've been very fortunate the last couple of years, and so we're having a new deck built out back, and we're going to have a new hot tub being delivered, and good luck with that as far as the scheduling goes, I'm sure. Our good friend Brian Miniger at Bear Creek, he's the guy. He's going to be our sponsor for the ACC tournament. He was our sponsor for the Belk Bowl. And so, you know, Brian and Bear Creek, they're going to do their best to get out of here in this muddy, marshy, swampy mess. so we get the fun of all the snow, then we get it melting, and then it's just going to be atrocious. So I guess I'm glad from the UVA sports schedule standpoint, I don't have any games this week. Virginia's on the road tonight at Virginia Tech on Saturday at Louisville. I guess I can announce Saturday I'll be doing something for the first time. You know, I've been doing ESPN3 work mainly with VMI the last 4 years. And so I've done a lot of baseball. I've got a schedule of, I think it's 19 baseball games coming up this spring, starting in March. And I've done soccer and I've done football. And I'm adding wrestling to the list. I'll be the host and in charge of play-by-play and analysis and such for the VMI home wrestling meet this weekend, this Saturday. So I actually will miss the Louisville game on TV. I would cover that game from TV. It's in Louisville, you know, kind of a long road trip for that. So, but we will be, so we'll have Zach Peerless and Scott German leading our coverage of the noon tip on Saturday, because I'll be at VMI at 1 o'clock wrestling meet. And it was funny, the Wade Branner, the voice of VMI Sports, asked me if he had to fill in for him and do that. Have I done wrestling before? I didn't want to tell him I've done wrestling before, but not amateur wrestling. I've actually been, I was a color commentator and backstage interviewer on a pro wrestling broadcast, a pilot episode of a series that never caught on, unfortunately. Also Wrestling Entertainment Night of the Legends, was the idea of, it was a pilot show. It was a pay-per-view show. It was a live show, live on in-demand pay-per-view. But the hope of the company was that would be a pilot for a weekly series that never materialized. And I was a backstage interviewer. I was a much different looking guy than I am now here in 2019. I'm 195 pounds. I run regularly. I've run 3 marathons, you know, all this kind of stuff. Back then I was 280 pounds, and I was bigger than most of the talent. So I shouldn't have been interviewing. I interviewed the Rock and Roll Express and a couple guys who were smaller than me. One of the notes from the director was, next time we're going to put you with the heels, the big guys. We should have had you interviewing Hacksaw Duggan and Kevin Nash, who won't be appearing at VMI this weekend, by the way. It'll be amateur wrestling. So looking forward to that opportunity. And then next month, my baseball schedule starts. In fact, college baseball is already underway. UVA 0-3 in the MLB 4 tournament, losing to three top 25 teams. It was Vanderbilt on Friday. It was TCU on Saturday. Cal State Fullerton rallies with 3-9 to win last night 6-5. And so Virginia starts 0-3. Scheduled to play Wednesday, now Tuesday, moved up to get ahead of the weather, VMI. So, hey, UVA VMI playing tomorrow. I'm not sure I'll get over for that game. The snow is supposed to start tomorrow night, and I'm not sure if we'll make it over to cover that game in person. It is on TV. It'll be on the ACC Network, probably ESPN3. So catch that tomorrow. So that's a lot going there. Wanted to talk about a couple things here on the podcast. Since I'm sure we'll talk with Scott German and maybe Zach Peerless tonight after the UVA Virginia Tech basketball game. So we won't be talking as much more about UVA basketball in this podcast, but got a chance to catch briefly the end of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view last night, the WWE pay-per-view. Sort of the second in WrestleMania season. Royal Rumble always kicks off WrestleMania season. The Elimination Chamber Fastlane is next month. Hey, that's just got a name. That's just a pay-per-view that they put a name on. The Elimination Chamber actually has a gimmick match. In fact, two last night. One for the women's tag team titles, won by Bayley and Sasha Banks. Not surprisingly, it felt like that's where that was going. Got to catch the end after watching our new favorite TV series, True Detective, which has a season finale next week. So we watched that last night when it was on HBO, and caught the end of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, which was the main event was an Elimination Chamber match. Daniel Bryan defending his WWE title in an Elimination Chamber match. Tough, from a competitive standpoint, if you're buying into the storylines, tough for the champion to have to defend against all those guys in a chamber match like that, Elimination Chamber match. And it came down to, and I love this, surprise. Daniel Bryan was one of the final two with Kofi Kingston, who was a late addition to the match. And Kofi has pretty much made a name for himself, certainly with the New Day. He had a run as a singles. I think he was IC champion for a while back a few years ago before the New Day stable emerged. But, Kofi, most of his success is tag teams. The New Day is over. I mean, they've been over with fans for a long, long time. And so Kofi Kingston, but it's part of a group, right? And so Kofi gets last night this push. He put a couple guys out. He eliminated Randy Orton towards the end. One was down to three. And he had a few near falls in that final, say, 7-8 minutes that it made it look like for a while. And the crowd was hot with him. They were on top of. They really wanted, the live crowd wanted to see a Kofi Kingston upset win, take the title home with him. So Daniel Bryan thus gets, with live crowd push for Kofi as the babyface, boy, even more over as a heel now, Daniel Bryan getting the clean fall to defend the title. But I think what's going on here, I mean, I'm just reading some tea leaves. There has been talk with the All Elite Wrestling Company that's starting up. They haven't put a show on yet. They've sold out their Double or Nothing show that's coming up in a few months as the company's working to acquire talent and work towards a TV contract. There's been rumors about TBS or TNT being interested in a weekly deal with this company, I think more towards the fall. But some big names, the Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes, Kenny Omega, part of this outfit. And logically what we've been seeing, it seemed like we were heading towards another Daniel Bryan match with AJ Styles, possibly at WrestleMania for the WWE title, because we've been in that direction for quite a while. Those guys have been working for the WWE title for several months now. But there's talk about AJ Styles perhaps when his WWE contract comes up. And it's all speculation in the wrestling business. We don't really know what the truth is about this. Everything's a work. You gotta factor that in. But there's talk that AJ's contract's coming up after WrestleMania. That seems logical. That's sort of the WWE season, WrestleMania to WrestleMania seems to be their season. And if his contract is indeed up, there is some thought that he might actually sign on with the AEW folks. AJ Styles worked closely with Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, together when they were all in New Japan after AJ had left, you know, Impact Wrestling and had moved on from there. Before he landed in WWE, he spent a couple of very successful years in New Japan. In fact, he was the IWGP champion before leaving for WWE. So the idea that AJ might bolt for AEW makes sense. You know, it's something that's not out of the realm of possibility. And I wonder now, if seeing last night, if you see, Kofi getting that push last night. It wasn't a fluke. It didn't feel fluky at all. It seemed like WWE was trying to build him up with his performance in the match last night to be a guy that could be looked at as a number one contender. And it would not surprise me if we see this week, you know, the build towards perhaps a Daniel Bryan Kofi Kingston match one on one. I would think not at Fastlane. I wouldn't waste it there. I would try to push it in the direction of WrestleMania. So if that's the case, that's smart maneuvering. If your fear is that you're going to lose AJ Styles, who's been, you know, your top guy for the last couple of years, kind of push him out the door quietly. You know, he was in the match last night, the Elimination Chamber match, lost early, and quietly move him down the card and quietly move Kofi up the card. And that'd be smart booking. It'd be smarter booking than what we've seen in New Japan. You follow the situation here. I'm a big New Japan fan. Mentioned Kenny Omega signing with AEW, and he was booked last summer at Dominion. He finally won after a couple year chase. He finally defeated Kazuchika Okada to win the IWGP Championship, and it felt very fulfilling for fans who'd followed that chase for so long to finally see Omega beat Okada in that great series. And we're now learning that the booking at the time was a year ahead. We knew even last summer at Dominion when Omega beat Okada that New Japan was working towards a Madison Square Garden show the week of, in fact, the Saturday before WrestleMania in Madison Square Garden. You know, WrestleMania this year being in New York, so with all the attention of the wrestling world on New York, New Japan invading New York, the Madison Square Garden, the arena. So the it's the mecca for college basketball. It's the mecca of pro wrestling. And the idea was for an Okada Omega rematch. Well, then Omega, and then this is, I think that was before, if I'm starting to think the timeline through, there had been rumblings about a new company, but we didn't know anything official about what became All Elite Wrestling. We certainly didn't know that, the son of the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, a billionaire in his own right, last name Khan, I don't know the first name right off. That he was going to be heavily invested in this, that the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes were already, you know, committed to it. They played coy with Kenny Omega. And so that Omega would be leaving New Japan. Well, New Japan goes in panic mode. They had been – their program was a sort of a throwback. They brought Tanahashi back. They have him win the G1 Climax. Winning the G1 Climax tournament gives you that shot at the champion. At Wrestle Kingdom, their January big show, their WrestleMania is in January, early January, and it appears now that Omega was supposed to win that match, but you know, give the ace a push, a goodbye push, if you want to say, and then Omega gets the win over him, goes in hot to that rematch with Okada, and then lose the belt back to Okada. Well, as we know, Omega was destined to sign with AEW. And so New Japan had to put the brakes on that game plan because that wasn't going to work. And so Tanahashi, actually, they left him in the match at Wrestle Kingdom. He wins the title back in a not very impressive match, I have to say. I mean, Tanahashi is an older guy who's been through several injuries. He put on the best match he could, but he wins the belt back against Omega. And then this weekend loses it to Jay White, Switchblade Jay White, an up-and-coming star, but apparently an interstitial champion, if you want to use that terminology. It looks like he's going to be holding the belt until the April show at Madison Square Garden. He's going to be wrestling against Okada. So he's going to be filling the role of Kenny Omega, who'd been turned heel You know, Omega had was really over with Japanese fans, and whether or not he was heel or face, he was treated by fans largely as a face. But the maneuvering with Tanahashi was to also, you know, sort of turn Omega back to the heel side and get the fans rooting against him so that they would be more inclined to want to root for Okada and sort of have Okada be the underdog going into that match in April in New York. And then he could become the face of the company again. Well, now Jay White's got a lot of legitimate heat with fans there. He certainly was playing his role after the win over Tanahashi this past weekend. And so Jay White now filling the Omega role. I think we're going in that direction, but I tell you that story as much to tell you about the AJ Styles Kofi Kingston story from last night at Elimination Chamber. We don't know anything about AJ Styles' future, whether or not it's going to be with WWE. He's on the cover of the game of WWE 2K19. You'd think that there's a future there, but if not, Kofi Kingston, your number one contender heading into at least Fastlane, if not into WrestleMania, then in a couple of months, and actually, I guess we're about a month and a half away from WrestleMania. And so, that all said, yeah, maybe that's a positioning to just quietly put AJ down the ladder a little bit, and start moving forward. I guess if you're WWE, so. Something fun I noticed this weekend. We'll see how it plays out. We'll see how smart I am. I'm decently smart. I wrote a wrestling show once, but I've been out of the business for a while, so we'll see. Wanted to mention this past weekend, got a chance to see, switching gears. So I guess this is an entertainment-based podcast today. Got a chance to go out and see some live stand-up comedy in Charlottesville, about 20 mile drive. Kathleen Madigan, one of my favorite comedians, and we saw this listed a few months ago. She was playing at the Jefferson Theater in Charlottesville in the downtown mall. And wow, they've had some good comedians lately. Hannibal Buress was there back in November. In fact, it was when we were there that we saw either a poster in the venue or something online, just coincidental to us being there, about Kathleen Madigan. And so, wow, they've had some really top flight comedians in the last few months. And Kathleen Madigan put a great show on Friday night. And Jefferson Theater is a really nice venue. If you live in the Charlottesville, Central Virginia area, and you've not been there for anything, they bring some really interesting acts in. We saw Frankie Ballard, country music artist, who when we saw him a couple years ago, he had just played with Florida Georgia Line at JPJ, and then maybe 2 months later, he was doing his own show there. Good show. Great venue for that. It holds about 700 people, and so perfect for a concert like that, perfect for the comedy. So, great show, and looking forward to what they have coming up next with some more comedy or some more music. But nice venue, a lot of food options around there. It was that night, Friday night, it was 60 degrees. We got there about 7:30. The show started at 8:30, so we got there a little early. And there were people at 7:30 at night in February eating outside on the downtown mall. You know, there's the restaurants have outside seating, and 7:30 at night in February, it felt so decadent to see people out there. Having a good time. They won't be this week with all the snow we have coming our way. So I wanted to wrap this podcast up, I guess. I was filibustering here for a bit. Pitchers and catchers have already reported, right? There's nothing new as far as that goes. I am flabbergasted as any of y'all listening in. What is going on with Bryce Harper and Manny Machado? You know, ever since about November 1st, I check Twitter, I check ESPN.com, I check the ESPN app on my phone, whatever the case, several times a day. I've been doing this. This is, we're 3 months into this now, seeing where they sign. You know, they're local for local listeners, for, you know, fans of the local teams, Nationals and Orioles. You know, I mean, I don't think the Orioles are going to be able to re-sign Machado, but at this stage, why not, right? And nobody else seems to be able to put their money together. And as far as Harper goes, I'm a Nats fan, and, you know, I've written columns about how the Nats ought to not re-sign him if he's going to be $30 million a year, and, you know, how tough it might be because of what else they've done now, and, you know, they've got a lot of young outfielders, so maybe, you know, all this kind of stuff. That all said, I want Harper back. I mean, I know I'm making the intellectual case, and I'm doing the analytical numbers and all this stuff, but I want Harper back. And I'm, you know, Scott German, who joins me on a lot of these podcasts, he wants Machado back with the O's. He's a big O's fan. He's been an O's fan since he was a kid. We want him back. But they're nowhere. This is so vexing to both of us that we're sitting courtside at JPJ on Saturday, and during timeouts, Scott and I are dissertating to each other about, what's going on. It's collusion. It feels like collusion. The latest word is just whoever you're reading. Saturday, I was telling Scott I'd read something literally, an hour before the game, the basketball game, about, well, it looks like Harper's going back to the Nats. And now the last thing I read was it looks like he's going to the Phillies. And then, the Padres are supposedly in the mix for one or both of these guys. The Padres, which that's a joke. The idea that the Padres, who if they sign one or either, either one of these guys is going to double their payroll. This is not a good look for baseball. This is not a good look for MLB. And you can guarantee that you're hearing about contracts now. Some of the free agents signing now late because spring training's already started. Are working to get their contracts front loaded. If they're talking about 3-4 year deals, or they're working to get their contracts front loaded because the assumption is there's going to be a strike. Because of what we've seen with Machado and Harper and Dallas Keuchel and lots and lots of other guys who are out there, there's at least 50 free agents, not Harper, Machado, Dallas Keuchel level, but Craig Kimbrell's still out there. There's 50 free agents, and that's not it's not an exact number, but around 50 free agents who are still unsigned. And the luxury tax is part of it. The 6-year window that teams have control over players from the end of their minor league stint to when they can go free, completely unrestricted as free agents. That's part of it too. I think we're going to see something with the NBA in a labor situation. Their rookie salary scale is also, and the players agree to it, but it's also restrictive for those players. So I know that the average listener out there says you're talking about guys making $1 million, $10 million, $50 million, whatever. Don't talk to me about that. I make $50,000 and I'm happy about that. But, if you were at the top of your profession and you were told you couldn't make any more money because of artificial restrictions, you would be upset about that. You would want to make as much money as you can while you can, because you can't be a baseball player when you're 70. We're talking about just the tip of the iceberg, top of the top elites. At their job, and I tell you what, I'd rather those guys get the money than lots of people who right now have a lot of money who didn't do a thing to earn it. You could talk about your various people who inherit money, inherit wealth. They have parents, grandparents who hand them money. At least these guys have had to work for it and be good at what they do to be in this position. And I want to see them make the money. So anyway, but. No news. In fact, I'm wrapping this podcast up. It's 4:15 on Monday. So, hope that it's dated, because I hope that means one of these guys signs today. I don't think it's going to be the case, because I just clicked on ESPN.com and there's nothing. So we're still there. There's no news as far as these guys go. They don't need spring training, I suppose. They'll go through their own things, but it's not a good look. And baseball is something I love. I talk a lot of basketball. In the fall, we talk football. The UVA sports fans out there, I love being able to break everything down for you, but baseball is my passion. I'm so lucky that I get to do the 19 games a year I do for VMI. This will be my fourth year of VMI baseball broadcasting, ESPN3 baseball broadcasting, focusing on VMI. I did 6 years of Valley League baseball, the summer baseball league, summer college baseball league here in the Shenandoah Valley, Virginia. One of the top leagues of its kind. I got to do the play-by-play for the Waynesboro Generals team for 6 years. So this is my 10th year of baseball broadcasting. I love baseball. I can wake up in the middle of the night without even an actual game going on and give you an inning of play-by-play. That's how much I live this. But, yeah, it's not a good look. It's not a good look for the sport, for the game that I love. And so there we go. So I think we should wrap ourselves up for this podcast. Again, tonight, Scott German and I will see if Zach Perilous will be available. He'll be probably busy, though, post-game at Castle Coliseum, so we'll talk with him most likely tomorrow, getting his feelings on UVA Virginia Tech. But we'll give you some thoughts tonight on UVA Virginia Tech after the game, so look forward to that. You'll hear me complaining more about snow in the next couple of days, and more this week here on Street Knowledge. Signing off, I'm Chris Graham. Have a great day.